We're starting a series today, Chicks Who Are Killing It. This is a cool story, and it's probably one of the most unique stories in Australia.
Australia?
Yes.
Wow.
Big call.
Hey, John, how are you?
Well, Glenn, you?
Mate, I'm living life on my own terms, so going great.
Excellent.
Syl, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank
welcome.
You.
Welcome.
Well, everybody, you've heard it here first. This is Chicks Killing It. It's the first episode of our mini-series. And before we get into what we're doing, Syl, you're a co-founder of a coffee roaster called Floozy Coffee Roasters.
Yes.
And you're being kind enough to open your doors, and we're sitting next to your roaster. So we're going to have a chat about your story and how it is unique in the industry that you're operating in. But the first thing I wanted to say to John was, if you got $5,000 tomorrow, what would you do with it?
Well, right at this moment?
Right at this moment.
Oh, we're putting a pool in out the back, so I'd probably enhance that another level.
Right.
Mm.
Get a slip and slide.
Yeah.
Which
like leads into the pool.
Kids? Or are you
you're... It's more... That's a
like
short-term
an
thing,
pool.
Isn't it? Yeah. more thinking a lap pool or something like
that. Oh, really? Do you make your kids like be athletes like yourself?
Yeah, I try to. No, of course not.
All right, so you would add it to some boring pool or something?
Yeah, something boring like that. Maybe buy my wife a present if I had anything left over. No.
Syl, what would you do with $5,000 if I gave it to you tomorrow?
I would just leave. I'd go
just
on holiday.
Get the hell
out
of here.
I'd just go for like a week.
Yeah, okay, see ya.
I'd run out of money and come back.
K-Mac, who is your business partner.
Mm.
K-Mac, you just watch a few things, I'm out.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Gone.
Yeah.
And where would you go?
Where?
Yeah.
Oh, where would I go? The typical answer would be Denmark.
Denmark,
I love it.
Really? Oh. Yeah, I want to go to Scandinavia.
It's so fun. Mm. I lived there for 6 months and then I'm that person who's like, oh, that time I lived in Denmark.
Yeah.
You know?
They pay low taxes, don't they?
Yeah, the $5,000 would be gone in tax.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. There was this old guy I used to work with and he would have been in his 60s and he kept referring to the time that he did his Kentucky tour in America in like the 80s or something.
Yes.
Like, and I was like, mate, you can't hang on to that story anymore.
No, I want to be that guy. That's cool.
Yeah.
It's like, nah, mate, the world's changed.
That's
the last
dream.
Time you had fun.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much. Aww. So, okay, so you'd spend it on a holiday?
Yeah.
Wow.
Props.
Nice.
That's not a good investment, is it? That's just
you can't
like...
buy a car for $5. You'd have to buy a Vespa.
No, I'd probably buy like a piece of crap Falcon again and take it down to the racetrack.
Yeah.
No, my latest thing is my next purchase, and you can keep me accountable to this, like to actually purchase it.
Right.
I want to get some maroon. What are you?
Maroon.
I think I get confused with like the Americans that I talk with, Maroon 5 and all that.
Well, it's like spelt maroon, but
okay.
You're doing
so
it wrong.
I'm pretty. Oh, thanks. Hey, this is my podcast. You don't correct me.
Sorry.
No, you can.
Spend your 2 minutes.
Yeah, I know. Right on the show. That's fine. She made us a nice coffee, so
did too.
Anything goes.
With no milk.
No, this is John's like first black coffee.
Never.
So, I would get some maroon suede RM boots that I want.
Ooh.
So.
I was only looking at those 2 days ago.
Do you want to go?
Oh, my God. You should get matching boots.
We've already got a matching shirt. We're
That's
not going
cute.
To as well.
We've both got the same Country Road.
On purpose?
Egyptian cotton long sleeve navy t-shirt.
I've had
t-shirt.
It for years and Glenn just got it.
Whatever.
John did it first. So. Oh, there's unioners on strike. They've been
going down
the street all week,
Oh, this is going to be great. So, if you can hear the background noise, it's around election time, I'd presume. And
it's like the mining union or something.
And are they going to walk past here?
Yeah. They've got big flags and everything.
We maybe need to stop this podcast when they get closer.
That's a bit noisy.
Wow.
Yeah, it's aggressive.
What are they saying?
It's been a while since I've seen a good protest.
If you haven't already, make sure you jump into the Facebook group. There's almost 2,000 of you in there now. So that's an amazing connection point.
Mm.
And I like chatting with all of you in there. And John does as well. Thank you to everyone sincerely for listening and giving us your time. We're just here to educate you, inspire you with your career, life and money. And, at this point in time, highlight chicks that are killing it.
Mm.
So thanks, Syl. Let's have a chat.
Let's do it.
This is where the song plays.
Yeah. And then Asher will do his thing.
Yep.
And then we'll get into it.
Welcome to My Millennial Money. You're listening to our three-part series, Chicks Killing It, where we highlight women who are killing it in their career.
Can you tell us just a bit of the backstory around the why for Floozy, and how long was it in your mind before you before you guys pulled the trigger? Was it, and just, yeah, and let us know your relationship with K-Mac and who isn't here, who's your business partner.
Yep.
Yeah, let's just set the scene.
Well, K-Mac's my bestie. We definitely were the kind of people that just think of a thing and do it. So it wasn't
like
a
don't know anyone like that.
Yeah. We weren't like planning it for years or anything. Yeah. We had an opportunity to kind of rent some equipment, some roasting equipment, and K-Mac had previously worked in coffee. She owned a cafe,
sure,
which is where we met. I'd never worked in coffee, but yeah, it was just kind of this this thing that her partner was actually doing. So he sort of became a coffee roaster, went from cafe to coffee roaster, and yeah, we just thought we'd muck around on his equipment because we could. Mm. And then sort of looking into the industry, noticed that there weren't really any women coffee roasters, and it, from our perspective, like, we couldn't see any.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as we're digging into it and looking into it, you know, there's a couple in Norway or America or the odd one in Australia, but it's really, really rare. It's mostly just like white dudes with beards.
Yeah.
And
what do you think that is?
I don't know. I guess that just, that's the norm now. And yeah, so maybe, I think that a lot of the opportunities to become a roaster, because it's kind of this disconnect, right? Like, every second person you meet is a barista or has worked on a coffee machine.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's pretty, you know, heaps of people have done that. But to then become a roaster, like how do you even do that? Like,
yeah.
And so people would typically, like, the most common route to do that, you might work in a cafe, become head barista, become like a roaster's assistant, and sort of work your way up.
Yeah.
And we kind of feel like men typically get those promotions and then end up in those positions. Like, you don't see many women who become roaster's assistants.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess we kind of did ours a different way in that we just started our own business, which was, you know, completely by accident as well. We thought K-Mac and Hal still owned their cafe, which they've since sold. But we were like, yeah, we'll roast a few kilos, sell it to the cafe. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they just, we couldn't see many women roasters, and so we just decided to take it on, and then that's, it just kind of grew from there.
Yeah. So do you think it was a, it was probably a two-edged sword? It's like, it'd be cool to roast, and also, why aren't there any women in this? Let's give this thing a shake.
Yeah, totally. Mm. And just, we're both very, like, stubborn. So as soon as we see something like that, like, oh, there are no chicks doing it, why not? We could do that.
Yeah.
And that's literally how we were like, just started the business.
Right. And I did see on Instagram, you personally have just finished some study and you did a thesis.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that's very interesting.
Yeah. So that kind of, I guess, came around through Floozy. So when we started the business, we were really aware of the lack of women in roasting. And then once we were in a position where we were buying green coffee, we realized that there are a lot of women responsible for producing coffee around the world, and that there was a lot of inequality at origin. So, you know, we're thrown in the deep end on this thing, and then doing our best to purchase from women who, you know, owned their own land, would be in control of the money that was actually paid to them. So our business kind of took on this whole other side thing of actually promoting women at every level of the coffee chain, not just once it gets here and we roast it and, you know, women in cafes.
And is most of that overseas? Like,
yeah.
Ethiopia and,
oh, yeah. Yeah. I think where coffee actually grows mostly is in, you know, Africa, Asia, Central America. Yeah.
And usually around the equator.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, there is some coffee that's being grown in Australia, but it's just, it tastes totally different. And it's the cost to grow it. It's just totally different.
Yeah.
Like, it's a real different market. So yeah, my background's actually in economics. Right. So I did my undergrad in economics and then I started doing my master's, and I was going in a completely different field with that. But then, yeah, finding out about all this stuff happening at Origin.
And it's funny, like you say, that's your background. We always say that nothing's wasted.
Yeah.
And you'll probably see as your career and life goes on.
Yes.
That's been a really good platform to know how the world works in terms of a, you know, economy or economist.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, as a business owner, for sure.
And then a business owner.
Yeah.
And do you have, and I'll just, I'm a bit like all over the place.
Yeah,
like
the
way I think, it's like a Star Wars laser gun or whatever, just shoots everywhere. So jump in if you can.
Oh, good.
do you have plans to go direct to farm at some point, or is that a higher barrier to entry than getting a roaster and just ordering it?
No. It's not so much that it's a barrier to entry. Like we could do it. And I think from the outside, it might look like purchasing through importers and exporters is like that they're middlemen. Yep. So it's like money going to them. Why? We could go direct to the producer. And a lot of people would think that, like, go direct to the producer. They'll get all the money. Heaps better for them.
Like drugs, isn't it?
Yeah, sure.
Cut out the middleman.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So the people that we work with to do all of our importing and exporting for us, they're actually, as you know, as well as doing the logistical stuff like that, they are a team of agronomists. They do infrastructure in these countries. Right. They're training the producers to produce better quality coffee and giving them assistance. So if I go in 1 year and give them a higher premium, cool, that's great for a year.
But is it sustainable?
It's not. And it's they offer them so much in terms of training and infrastructure.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, it's they're not middlemen in our case.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes back to like when we talk about businesses, and I was having a conversation with a friend this morning, and I coach her, she's in the States. You know, she goes, oh, should I do this? It's like, no, core business. Yeah. You know, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, your core business, and we can roast coffee well, we can empower women well.
Right.
And we do. Jeez. Hey.
Can we shut that window? It might help.
Oh, we'll just see. It might be once off.
Cool.
And doing what you're doing, you can empower women if it's inspiring your customers, or you might not only have one choice of supplier to use and you're just doing what you're good at and what you're in control of.
Yeah.
So, no, that's interesting. That's why I kind of asked that.
Throughout your thesis or in research stage to start this roasting business, did you get on the ground overseas to have a look around or?
Nope.
No,
we haven't done that.
Purely research.
Yeah, we so the research for the business, like there is a lot of information out there. It's not always necessarily even helpful for us to like go show up at a farm, and it can be quite a burden to some producers. So we really trust the merchants that we work with. They do a lot of work on the ground.
Yeah.
Some of our merchants are based, you know, in Colombia, in Nicaragua. Yeah. So,
and just back to your thesis, what was the topic?
So it was women's land rights in coffee producing countries.
Wow.
It was a systematic review of all the existing literature. So that was for my master's degree. So it's kind of this thing that, you know, there's before you start going to countries and doing research, like you need to really know what's out there. So doing this full review of all the literature around women's land rights and coffee was necessary.
And I think it goes back to you saying, like, if you go in there, pay premium and, you know, make sure it's all good. It's almost like, what is it? Was it in John, you might remember, in the 40s or 50s? The worst thing the West did was went to the third world and told them they were poor.
Right.
Like, that was a problem. I'm like, yeah, sure, there's been some good benefits and whatnot, but conceptually, you just can't go in and say, oh, we can help. And if you don't do that long term in a, I don't know, you'd probably have more of a comment on that.
Yeah. I mean, definitely like with my background being in economic development, there's a lot of really bad things that are happening that are, you know, under the mask of like aid or all those like, probably the worst thing the actual West ever did was like take over countries and like pilfer them, you know, like just destroyed communities.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, and it is this kind of Western thinking of, you know, showing up in a different country that's a completely different culture to yours and being like, wow, your quality of life is crappy. Like, yeah. compared to what?
Compared
like
to it's, exactly.
It's, so you really, you know, and there are some really basic indicators of living standards, like life expectancy, education, yeah. health. Like, there should be minimum standards there, but just because your life looks different to mine.
Yeah,
doesn't mean it's bad. Worse.
Exactly.
But, you know, there are definitely some minimums.
Yeah, everything's relative, I guess.
Yeah. yeah. But if you look at like a lot of the... So in coffee, for example, in the commodity markets, which we don't purchase in, we're all specialty, but, you know, most, the bulk of coffee bought worldwide would be commodity. And so the price for that is controlled by the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
makes sense.
So yeah. can you just clarify for the listener the difference between commodity and specialty?
Yeah, so a specialty coffee, depending on which country you're in, it's coffee is graded. It's given like a point score, and essentially it'll just be, for the most part, anything that earns 80 points or above. So it just means that it might be, you know, free of defects. It's just a good quality, clean coffee.
Right.
Tastes real yummy.
Yeah.
Good quality stuff. Generally hand-picked.
Yeah.
Processed really differently. Commodity coffee might be kind of lower quality, kind of all thrown in together, that your big
bulk items.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like yeah. It's just a
43 international.
Look, not to comment on any other businesses' coffee.
No, but it is fact.
For sure. It's
Nescafe.
Yeah.
It's just a totally different, you know, different product. It's a completely different product. Yeah. But there is a price crisis at the moment in commodity coffee where, you know, the average price per pound is like less than $1.
Right.
And for most people to produce a pound of coffee is at least $1.20.
$1, yeah.
So it's just people aren't even getting paid.
I wonder if it's similar to like the farming milk thing here in Australia.
Oh my God, totally.
It sounds like it's exactly the same, isn't it? Yeah, it's driving people off the land because of it, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and that's another thing that like countries in the West are just – smashing these producing countries by paying less than what the coffee is worth.
Yeah.
So that's a huge issue in the broader coffee sector. Generally, when you're talking to, you know, it's important for us, and we, all of our producers get paid above their cost of production because of the people that we work with. We're buying, you know, very expensive, beautiful quality coffees.
And this was delicious. What was that we were drinking?
Oh, that was from a woman. Her name is Sonia Mbachi. She is from Colombia.
Wow.
And she's actually a producer that we work with year in, year out. So that's her second harvest that we've finished by. So that's really cool that we have these relationships
like
with these people.
You're drinking a story, aren't you?
Oh, it's so
great.
Cool.
From wholesale to retail,
you
know the chain line all the way through, which is sensational.
Mm. Yeah.
You don't see that much.
Which I guess in specialty coffee, it can come with a premium because there's – do you know the cafe in Surry Hills, the Caffeine Reformatory?
Reformatory Lab.
Yes, that one there. I went in there the other day and, you know, I think I had I think it was the end of last year or whatever it was.
The other day or last year.
Things just fly past. And, you know, they've got some really intense specialty stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like $30, I forget. But it was – amazing, delicious. For me, I guess I can't taste the difference between this amazing one and the $30 one.
Sure.
But I guess if you're in that world.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm saying is they may have got that batch, a very small batch from a specialty region.
Yeah.
And the price just goes up.
Totally. It's worth it.
Yeah.
And I think even when it comes to coffee, like whether you're good at tasting or not, if you have two cups in front of you and one was, you know, produced – essentially by slaves that are being paid nothing, or the other one I can tell you, hey, I know the name of the woman who produced this. I know where her farm is. Even if that coffee technically tastes better, I don't want that one.
And I guess back to the ethical thing with ethical investing. You will, like, there's a book out there that tells everyone to go to the cheapest super fund or whatever. That's not going to be an ethical investment fund. If you want ethical, you have to pay for it. And it's the same with, you know, our clothing. If you want something that isn't fast fashion from H&M and Zara and all that crap, you will pay for it.
So who is your common purchaser? I suppose sounds though you're the Louis Vuitton of specialty coffee, right? When you're roasting versus the 7-Eleven version.
Oh, 7-Eleven, kill me. $1 freshly ground.
I've never tried it. I hear it's good.
I haven't either, but apparently.
And I don't want to try it.
For a dollar.
And clearly it's a loss leader to get people in their store. So
yeah.
Whatever.
kills me.
Yeah.
It's so I think it's that thing of like, you know, people need to actually pay more for their coffee.
Yeah.
So when I see stuff like dollar coffee, it kills me because even when people complain about prices rising from like $3.50 to $4 at their local cafe and they're just outraged, you know, like, oh my God, I'm like, of course that coffee needs to be $4. It probably needs to be $5, but the cafe owner is comping it because you can't handle it.
Like, it goes, it's kind of like with the Coles and Woolies thing when it was the race at the bottom for the $2 for 2 liters of milk.
Oh, yeah.
It was to get people in the store. So it's a strategic loss leader.
Totally.
But at the end of the day, I think they were playing silly buggers in the background and just pushing that loss back to the suppliers.
So
in your model, you obviously don't compromise on price. You just stick to quality and be ethically involved in that whole process.
And I think, say if we lost this amount of customers who don't want to pay that much, you make up for it by finding the people that will just pay what things are worth.
And it's that, like, with you know, if you're in a business and you've got customers, you know, you might have, I don't know, if there's 100 customers and 20 or 20% are your diehards and good, you just focus on the core.
Grow that
20. So just back to the specialty thing. So in summary, John was asking what specialty, and you've said it well that, you know, it is essentially, you know where it's come from. My other question is, do you think the word specialty coffee in Australia has been loosely applied to roasters who are not strictly specialty coffee?
Yeah, of course, because there's no restriction. There's no regulation. I can go print a bag and write specialty coffee on it and I can pour a bag of blend 43 inside and there's no one stopping me. Like it doesn't – it's a word that I think used to carry a lot of meaning, but now it really doesn't. So yeah, definitely. Specialty coffee is dead. It's just, it is a word that, and cause even when you're talking about coffee quality that you're purchasing at the green level, if I roast it real bad, it's going to taste bad, even if it was delicious.
That's right. So floozy coffee, you know, yes, you're a specialty coffer by default.
Yeah.
Would you challenge, the marketplace and say you're actually an ethical coffee roaster?
Yes. So, we, like, and that's kind of where we sit more, I think, in that we really put our producers to the front more so than anything. And, you know, and combining it with everything, like this research that I've done, like that goes into Floozy. Like, everything that we do is just because we care about making sure that everyone in the chain gets paid well and is looked after. Which
includes me sitting here now being looked after with an amazing coffee.
Yes, that's right. And me too.
To John's disgust, he did enjoy his black coffee.
I am enjoying black coffee.
No milk. No fridges in here yet. It's an empty room.
Yeah, we are sitting in their roaster in Newcastle. And before we continue, we'll jump in there at Floozy Coffee. So if you've got your phone on you, pick it up now at Floozy Coffee on Insta. Check it out because you'll get a bit of a vibe.
So if I was sitting there saying, right, I want to do this whole roasting thing, I'd don my apron.
Yes.
I suppose I'll wear an apron. But what are your top three criteria for success as a roaster, would you say?
Oh, I guess it really, really would depend on your market. Like, so for us, I think the reason that we've been successful is that we filled a gap in the marketplace, which was like, where are the chicks? Like, here we are. So people, I think, because a lot of the people that support our business have never even tried our coffee. They're just like hoping they'll love it. They want to support who we are and what we're about. Like all of our international customers pretty much have never tried our stuff. They're just like, get it over here. Wow. And they pay a massive amount to get it. And it's for the brand that they want to support, you know, women in coffee.
So question, if I'm in, so I've got friends in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Eric, you always listen. And Jesse listens.
Hi, Jesse.
You probably don't. Nick Bradley's my friend. And in series one, his wife lost the $10,000 wedding ring. So if Jesse wanted a bag, or if the boys wanted a bag of coffee and they ordered it online this week, when's it on their kitchen top?
International stuff is tricky. So international through our website generally takes between a week and 2 weeks, depending on where you are.
Which is fine, because if you shipped beans out, and you obviously wouldn't do pre-ground, I'd imagine internationally.
We can. It's up to the person.
Yeah. But essentially, but
you'd be better off not to. Yeah.
You've got a 6 week shelf life anyway, would you?
Yeah. So the shelf life, it's a funny thing. It really depends on how dark the coffee is roasted.
Right.
So really darkly roasted coffees have like a 2 week shelf life, really. Right. Like they're in and out.
Yeah.
Ours are on, you know, lighter side of the spectrum. So generally, like from roast day, 2 weeks after, they're tasting good. Like you sort of want to rest them for like a week or two.
How long has this been, this one that we've had?
That is only, 9 days old?
Yeah. Oh, so it's peak.
Yeah. So it's peak. But timed then you've,
That's why I do the scheduling around here, John.
You can have like for, you know, a month would be kind of like your window, but you know, we've had coffees before. Like I went to, we had a cupping event in Canada last year. It was a all women in coffee cupping event, and I took a bunch of coffees, and then just for fun I took one that had been sent as an international order and got lost, so it was meant to go to Canada, and then I went to Germany and it came back and it was like 6 months old, so I just took it because I thought it would be funny. And it was the best one on the table. It was like we had 70 people at this cupping, and they all voted that one as the best.
The cupping as in tasting.
Oh, a tasting.
Not going to the Cairo
tasting.
Yeah,
so it's like, it's kind of one of those things that, you know, maybe you'd want to consume it within a month or two, but it's up to you.
So on the Instagram at Floozy Coffee, you can click the link and get through to the website if you want to order some coffee and get it shipped.
Yes.
So in answer to John's question, it really depends, because it's the coffee side of it is so complex. Mm. If I could ask you, what do you think in starting the roaster and the business with KMAC?
Yeah.
What do you think your biggest challenge has been?
I guess we've had a really interesting journey. It probably hasn't been very conventional, because we were leasing some equipment from another roastery, and then about 8 months into our business, we decided to move our operations to Sydney for a while.
Yeah.
They had some really great gear down there that we were, again, leasing. But we just didn't expect to be... So we were in Sydney for 11 months, driving down there once a week, roasting coffee, driving back, while we waited for the roaster that we bought to arrive. So it took 10 months to get here.
And that's a Loring?
Yes.
American.
Yeah. Nice. So your overhead would have been much higher. Travel, commute,
totally.
As well as
and the time factor.
Sydney.
The time factor killed me. Mm. So for like 11 months, 1 day a week was out of action. KMAC was pregnant the entire time.
Yeah, I was going to say, because she's a mother now.
Yeah. So she had a baby in December, little Indiana.
Nice.
Sounds like a rocker, doesn't she, KMAC?
She's so cool. But, you know, she...
They both got coloured hair.
Yes.
Check out Insta, everyone.
She's such a hard worker, and she came to Sydney until like the end of November. So Indy was born on Christmas Day, and she just like kept coming. But her partner Hal is, you know, just beautiful, and so he was coming down to Sydney with me.
Yeah.
Because I can't drive a car. That's
really?
A real
Literally can't.
I'm 26 years old, and I still have my L's.
Wow.
Yeah, they expire for the second time next year.
Wow.
So what's your reason behind that? Just no exposure to it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Just haven't done it.
Any fear there?
Sort of. Like, I don't want to kill anybody. That's up there. But just I figure, like, I haven't really needed it thus far.
Yeah.
I owe a lot of lifts.
Yeah. Were you born and bred in Newcastle?
Tamworth.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. The country and still can't. That's
where did you move down
here? When you turned seven in
the
country.
I moved out of home at 16 because I finished school really early, and I went straight to uni in Armidale.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wasn't old enough to drive when I was in Tamworth, and then by the time I was at uni, all my mates had their P's, so they can't teach me. So I just never really been around.
Wow. Don't hear that often, do you?
Yeah. No. KMAC took me driving a couple times, and then she hassled me for like a year, like, you've got to get your P's. And then we stuck the L plates on and we did a couple trips, and then she stopped. So I think maybe I might be a terrible driver and no one wants to tell me.
Maybe needs some lessons from Glenn. He thinks he's Mark Scaife.
Oh. I never said that, John.
Well, I've sat in the passenger seat.
I said,
and
Scotty McLaughlin. I'd never want to be like a Holden driver.
Oh, how embarrassing.
Jeez, John.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, so Hal started coming down with us and, you know, just because I couldn't have done it on my own. And that's how we kind of operate with the three of us, like a little community. And so, and that meant K-Mac could, you know, keep doing stuff from home in Nui. But it would have been heaps better if we were all here because she could have, you know. And that's the best thing about having the roaster is, you know, she can bring Indy down here. He's got his little earmuffs on the wall.
Oh,
they're
great.
So cute.
I saw that, yeah.
And so, you know, we can all do stuff together again because we're in the same city.
Yeah, yeah.
And
your business is actively growing and acquiring new accounts?
Yes.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah.
And do you have a dedicated salesperson or you?
How
do you get clients?
I hate
do you just
it so
kind
much.
Of people reach out to you?
Yep. Exclusively. Just because, I don't like it. I'm not a salesy person.
Yeah.
What do you hate about it?
I love chatting to people. Yeah. That's my favorite thing. Like, I can make new best friends with whatever. Like, but then when it's, I'm just not really that person that's like, hey, so want to buy our stuff?
Yeah.
Like
it's
but
tough.
So I think so far, all the people that work with us are people that have come to us and said, hey, we want to buy your stuff.
Yeah.
Which is cool because they're like, they're true fans, right?
That's a sales tagline. We don't sell our stuff. People want to buy it.
That's right. People come to us. Yeah. We're too afraid to sell.
We don't sell coffee. People buy it from us.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Because I get the feeling that if you're passionate about something, it sells itself.
Sure.
So obviously that's happening with you without you having to open your mouth.
Yeah.
Because really, realistically, if you are in business, whether you're an orthopedic surgeon doing Nan's hip or selling coffee, you're a salesperson.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because if you don't have
first
customers,
yeah.
But if you've got a good product and the passion, as you say, John, that makes the whole process a lot easier.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, I would never employ someone to sell something if they didn't believe in the product.
Yeah,
when
for
people
sure.
call me and say, hey, do you want to move over to Red Energy or whatever the thing they're calling, I'm like, oh, do you use that provider at your own house? And you know, a lot of times they say no. I say, well, you do have to I don't know where I was going with that.
Yeah,
it's that passion thing.
You find your people.
So so the biggest kind of challenge was the actual logistics of roasting your core business.
Yeah, just in the wrong. We were in the wrong city.
Yeah.
That was an accident. It really was only meant to be kind of temporary.
Sure.
While we waited for this thing to arrive, and then because it was getting custom built and blah blah blah, and it was meant to, you know, arrive in September and then December, and it got here 2 weeks ago. So,
if there was a young lady listening who was interested in doing something for themselves, being self-employed, whether it's a coffee roaster in Perth or they want to do something, what advice, what would you say to them? Because we've got a very unique opportunity here to, I don't know if influence is the right word, but maybe speak into and encourage people who are engaged with us.
Yeah.
And that's why, in all sincerity, that's why I wanted to do this little series about Chicks Killing It, so we can talk into you, your life, you who are listening.
Yeah.
And it's easier for me to get somebody who's been out there killing it to help tell that message.
Sure.
So, is there something you'd want to say to empower young women to go and kill some stuff?
Ugh.
And you can, if you want to take a couple of minutes to think about that point.
Yeah, because did you see this as an opportunity to go and do something for yourself because you don't like being an employee? Did you see it as a great wealth creation tool? Did you see it as something that you're just purely passionate about and you just want to go and explore?
Yeah, I think probably more passionate about than anything, because neither K-Mac nor I are very money motivated people.
Yeah.
We want to make enough just to, you know, live. And
yeah.
But we're not like, I want $1 million house, like not interested in that. So,
yeah.
But I'll take it if someone's giving it to me.
Yeah, take it, flog it. And
So unpacking those comments, there was a word there, passion.
Mm, yeah, totally.
So,
well, the thing is, I think you work so friggin' hard. Like, think about what you think a business is like to run and then times it by a bajillion because it sucks sometimes and it's so hard and you can't do it really unless you
have that
care so much about, you know, and there's been times where if we didn't care so much and if we didn't have such a purpose, of course you would.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
Yeah, and I love that comment because if you want to go and work 25 hours a week, don't run your own business.
Oh, so totally.
When you say it sucks and all those explicit, one of those, what would you, what sucks about it? Like what, over the last sort of few years, what have you hated about it, I suppose?
Yeah. Some things that are really hard are, you know, you do work mental hours in the startup, like all day, every day is essentially your hours. You're always, you know, being contacted for something or another. So there's no holidays. Like if you were just working a regular job, you have 40 hours a week, 4 weeks holidays, like turn forget off. That. That's over. Yeah. And you won't earn anywhere near as much money as a regular job in the first little while. Yeah. So, you know, and then there's the other shitty... Sorry.
No, that's all right. I'm still clicking. I'm still clicking. It's clean, so whatever.
Yeah, the clean. Other, you know, the other thing is that, you know, we might love coffee roasting and we just might love being a part of that industry, but you've also got invoicing. There's Australia Post. Like 80% of my job is chasing parcels.
Yeah. Or, really?
So it's, you know, all those other things that are not part of the fun really, but that make that possible.
And so how old were both of you when you started Floozy kind of officially?
I would have been 24, came out 25.
And that's interesting because I started my business when I was 25.
Yeah.
And I guess, because I'm still going to go back and ask you if there's one sentence you would give to that under 30, but I'm going to say, you know, if it's Unky Glenny having a chat to... if you're under 30, and particularly if you're under 25... It's okay if you don't know what you want to do with your life. The worst thing that you could do is, well, the best thing you could do is save money, travel, and enjoy life, but also just start thinking. I mean, if you realistically hate your job and you're working a full-time job and you're 22 and you hate it, I'd be getting the bloody hell out of there and go and get a couple of casual jobs and just, I don't know, get out of that rut to free up your mind to be encouraged and inspired. Because if you're just working I'll use an example. If you're working in an office 5 days a week or in a shop or whatever it is, and you hate it and you've got no desire to go and be a doctor, you've got no desire to be a vet or anything like that or formal education and you want to start a business, I'd get the hell out of there, go get some part-time work, even if it's two jobs, just to put food on your table that will give you the passion back in your life to free your mind up.
Yeah.
And whether that's pissing off overseas and traveling. But I just want to let everyone know, just take that pressure off, particularly if you're under 25, because it might take a few years. Like even before I had the lightning idea to start my own business, I was saying to my mentor, I would have no idea what I would do for my own business. And it took him to say, just do what you're doing now for that guy, but do it yourself.
Do it
get a mentor. Did you have a mentor or someone like that, or was it kind of bounce the idea off each other?
I think so. More just each other.
Yeah. Which is fine because you just need someone else to, you know, to bounce off.
And, totally. I think it would have been very difficult. And, you know, we've said this many times before. If it was just one of us, like, you know, if I was doing this business on my own or if K-Mac was doing it on her own, because when, you know, maybe you could manage the day to day, but when things happen or you, you know, you have a bit of a setback or whatever, like it can be really tricky.
Yeah. Because I think we get told no a lot of the time too.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you rewind the clock and the first 10 people you told about this great business idea, they all said, no, don't do it, it's too risky.
Yeah. What it can be really deflating.
Yeah. So there's a good chance that nothing would get off the ground purely because of the people you surround yourself with.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So that's a common theme.
Yeah.
So can we swing back now? Mm-hmm. And what one liner would you say to somebody, given that little tangent we went
on? Do we mean like someone in coffee specifically or just like that wanted to start a business?
Any young woman.
A piece of advice.
Yep.
I guess maybe two things. Like first practical piece of advice would be the amount of money that you think you need to start your business. Just a little bit more. You know, because I think we got really lucky that we were able to start our business quite cheaply in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
We were leasing a lot of our equipment. So, you know, in terms of cash flow, like we didn't have massive upfront costs to start with.
Did you use debt at all in the business?
We didn't to start with.
Yeah.
You know, and since then we've invested in some pretty major things. Yep. So, you know, we've definitely taken some on. But to start with, no.
Yeah.
But it meant that the scale with which we could grow was different.
Yeah.
So, you know, for example, like buying stickers for bags.
Yeah.
You go, well, we only need 100 right now. Yeah. So we'll buy 100.
Yeah.
But if we could buy 1,000, they'd be cheaper. Yeah. But we can't really buy 1,000 right now. So it's just all those things that it's like when we started, because of the smaller quantities in which we were doing things, it was costing way more.
So if you had your time again, would you have stuck your neck out and bought that 1,000 or?
If I had my time again, I feel like I would just want to say, like, let's just get an extra, like, $5,000 just a little bit more of a buffer. But
I challenge that because there's a story that I've shared on this podcast before. When I started my business, the only kind of piece of advertising that I did, mm-hmm. I think it was either $500 or $850 or $900 or whatever. And so I'm like, yeah, that was a stretch at the time.
Yep.
Like if it was more than a grand, it may as well have been $300,000 because I just didn't have the money.
Sure. Yeah.
So I did the advertisement and I never got a phone call. And I was like, oh, that was a bloody waste of money, wasn't it? Now, a couple of years later, I was looking through my old archives on the computer. I'm like, oh, there's that old ad. I had my bloody phone number incorrect. Now, the thing I say to that is if I had debt and borrowed money, what if I use that advertising campaign and put $5,000 into that?
Yeah. Mm.
The debt has actually maximized my losses as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, it's annoying because, you want 100 stickers. It might be $1 each per sticker instead of buying a million and being 10 cents.
Yeah.
It's just that slow and steady.
Yeah, totally.
And we just, it's part of life.
Yes.
And you've got less of a chance of magnifying your errors.
I think so. And that was the thing that, you know, we were quite lucky by not having massive debts in the business. Mm. Like if we had started day one and said, all right, we want to have a coffee roastery. Mm. So let's invest, you know, $100,000 into buying all the gear.
Yeah.
And what if it didn't work out? Or we just tried it and we were like, oh, we hate being coffee roasters. This is lame.
Yeah.
You've got all this outlay.
And then you sell it for fire sale because you need the cash.
Right.
And
you're
back working a normal job and you still owe $30,000.
Yeah. Like, so instead we kind of built, you know, this brand. And if you go back to like when Floozy started on Instagram, I always think it's really funny because, you know, as we're sort of developing this thing and talking about it and trying to create a bit of hype, was kind of before we'd even roasted our first batch.
Yeah.
So I've got like photos of like coffees that weren't even ours, beans that were Hal's, like just all this stuff like, oh, you know, but it built this brand and people looking in thought we were way bigger than we were and that made us bigger.
But also that was just your vision being visualized.
Totally.
So it's not a bad thing.
No.
You
kind of have to do it a bit. You have to sort of, you know, everyone on Instagram is like faking it a little bit. You don't put up like, oh, great, I lost $100 today.
Yeah.
Damn it. It's like, oh, wow, how cool is this thing I did?
Yeah.
So, you know, you create that image and we try to be very real in ourselves and authentic.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not going to show you like, oh, I came home today and I cried because this thing broke.
Didn't happen.
Or like, you know, this it's just you don't do those things. Mm. But so you can create this idea of what your business is and even what you want it to be like.
Absolutely.
So that then it can be that.
To find authentic followers, they would like to see a bit of that as well. Like everyone's real, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, you're sitting here wearing a Reese Plumbing t-shirt. You're getting your hands dirty on a regular basis. So there's going to be ups and downs.
Mm. Yes.
Do you see yourself employing staff? Like what's your vision over the next sort of 3 to 5 years?
Yeah. Definitely with this new space that we've got, because we'll be putting in a tasting bar and all that kind of stuff as well. And we still want to work on the wholesale side of our business. So for a time, we'll be able to kind of manage little bits of both. But if we want to open the cafe longer hours or that kind of thing, more days a week, then we'll need to employ people.
Sure.
Which would be weird because we've never hired any. Oh, like it's just been
so
us.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, it'll be a time.
So your first little tip was whatever money you think you need, allow for more.
Just a bit more. A little bit more.
And then you had a second tip maybe up your sleeve.
I feel like the other one would be just kind of the only way you can do it is just to start doing it.
Sure.
And definitely would be to reach out to people in your industry.
Sure.
Because we found when we first started, and that's the best thing about Instagram, I love it so much, is that we literally just messaged a bunch of people that we really admired. Mm. And we were like, you know, hey, we're starting out. We really want to be like you. Like, this is really cool. Do you have any tips? And people were really helpful. They were like, hey, you know, don't use this shipping company. Or they sent us some coffee to market.
And it's that relationship. And like, I believe in business, there's enough work for everybody.
Totally.
And realistically, if you're roasting coffee or you're a financial advisor or you're an accountant or whatever you are, it's same team, as in we're providing a product. Yeah, sure, we'll compete. But at the end of the day, we're all the same team and there's enough work for everybody.
Yeah.
Mm. And actually, you may have heard Glee Coffee Roasters, who are essentially your competition.
Sure.
Like, in the purest form.
Essentially,
But there's collaboration.
Totally.
There's, and it's just a small world.
Yeah.
And we're just humans living.
Yes.
Why be nasty and bitchy?
Yeah.
That's just my personal vibe.
But it's not everyone's, is
but
it?
It's not everyone's. Yeah. And that's the thing. But I know one thing, the business owners that I know who have this type of vibe of collaboration, it's pretty much like, to the other people, that's cool. Let's compare notes in 20 years.
Yeah.
And I know what happens down the line, who's standing around, who's prosperous and who's, you know.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you're doing things to undercut people, being deceptive, and it's just not fun.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, totally.
Because realistically, yes, they're your customer. They're essentially your competition. But their customers would come in here and drink coffee. Your customers would drink coffee from them. It's the same freaking world.
I go to their cafes.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the thing, I think, in this town or in, you know, Australia, people love having coffee.
Absolutely.
No one, well, maybe some people do.
Sure.
Most people don't want to go to the same cafe every single day. We love to change it up. And so, you know, why not go to this cafe today and go to that one tomorrow?
And this is where I like that. With a specialty coffee thing, you do a nice filter here. So every time I'm in Newcastle now, there's a high chance that there'll be a different type of coffee from a different plantation that I can enjoy.
Exactly. I don't want to drink the same thing every day. Like, I don't wake up every single morning and go, Sonia and Batchy, that's what I'm doing. Like, I want that same. I get bored, you know? Yeah. Or even like, if you go to a cafe and it's, they've just got the same stuff all the time. Like, I love variety. And I think we all do.
My rant, well, it was my rant at the end of last year and I've kind of got off it. Like, a business is actually, in its true sense, a living and moving organism.
Mm-hmm.
And if something's moving and living, it's always changing. Like, we're all moving and living.
Mm. Yeah.
I know the photos I've seen of you 10 years ago, mate, they were pretty average.
I look younger, apparently.
I don't know, whatever. But it was crazy. But you're moving, you're changing. And that's what, like, on the side of my building where my office was, every couple of months, I'd put a new big banner up.
Cool.
Instead of just getting one sign and it's there for 50 years,
yeah.
I would rotate it every little while because a business should be moving, it should be changing, it should be growing, it should be agile, it should be looking and always changing.
Yeah.
And you've got a unique opportunity that you can add that flair in by getting different stuff from around the world.
Totally.
That the Nicaragua, how do you say it? Nicaragua?
Yeah.
That Nicaragua this season could taste different to
next
year. Yeah.
So you've got kind of this double down, awesome, cool thing happening
totally.
As well.
Totally. Yeah.
So that's cool. Now, I want to ask, you're in business, essentially a partnership.
Yes.
Do you both have different skill sets or is it a mirror? Like, how? What would you say that your strengths are over K-Max?
Well, definitely. So she's our head roaster.
Sure.
And being the coffee background, that makes the most sense.
Yes.
She's the best at it. And so she sets all of our roasting profiles, which is essentially like our roasting recipes.
Yeah.
So she creates all of that sort of stuff. And then I can kind of operate more as like her production roaster, like stick to her recipes and, you know, like I'm like her apprentice chef or something.
Can I explain it to John to make sure I understand how that works? So do you guys do blends at all? So, for example, what they can do on the computer is this recipe here, put it in and it tracks the heat, for example. So, you know that after 10 minutes, drop the heat and it charts it on a...
Yeah.
And then what you can do, the next roast, you've got your template or the profile, so you can just follow that to try and get consistency. Is that
exactly
a fair thing?
Yeah, definitely. And so, having that technology now... is, you know, some people look at it and they're like, oh, it's taken away the art of this. And it's so awesome because we can get that perfect consistency. Yeah, yeah. Like I can know that those beans were the same temperature as the last roast all the way through.
Absolutely.
And that's how we can do a lot of our quality control as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, we experiment. We might be like, let's just leave that 10 seconds longer and see what happens. And you can taste it and go. Because essentially, like, it's those two things together because the computer stuff is really important for consistency. Mm. But I can't look at a screen and go, oh, that's going to taste like this. Mm. I have to physically taste it. So it's a lot of experimenting. Like you might do it one way, taste it. That was awesome. I want them all in that, you know, to taste like that.
Yeah.
And so you set that profile.
So you're drinking a lot of coffee is basically what you're saying.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Always pinging.
Yeah.
So she definitely takes care of our coffee programs, are setting all of our profiles. She also does a lot of the tech stuff with cafes, so if their machines are playing up or the grinder needs to be serviced or whatever, that's not my world at all. That's K-Mac. She's got her little pink toolbox and she goes in and she does all that setting all the recipes in cafe, because that's what she is. She used to work in a barista. As a barista, she owned cafe, so she knows that stuff inside and out.
Yeah.
So she's generally the go-to person for that. And then I tend to do most of our social media.
Yeah, so all the marketing.
Yeah, all of our invoicing. But then otherwise, everything else in between, so any kind of like customer relations or any emails and stuff that we get, or, you know, every decision that we make together. And
sure.
So it's very mixed.
Yeah. So you don't – do you have anyone from the outside looking in over your business to say, well, yeah, you're doing this well, can you go and do this, this and this?
Like an external sounding board?
No, we don't.
Do you think that's needed as you grow down the line, or you just
– Maybe. No, it's kind of one of those tricky things that – you know, we love the way we do things so much, and there are things we could do better, like less Uber Eats or, you know, that's just being a bit more cautious maybe of, or more planned. We're not planners. Yeah. We've never had a business plan.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the way we chose to do things and it kind of works for us.
Yeah.
I don't think we're the kind of people that probably would respond very well to someone coming in and being like, all right, we're going to cut spending here. And because everything that we purchase... You know, because I guess most overseers would be like a money thing. Maybe someone would come in and say, you guys spend too much money on green coffee.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to spend any less.
You want to.
So I don't want to compromise the quality.
Exactly.
So I wouldn't actually listen to a business, you know, advisor who's like, hey, save some money in any of these places.
Yeah. No, I suppose I'm just thinking from the point of view of, well, You want your business to at some point be scalable. So you can't be continuing to work 7 days a week on this thing that you're so passionate about, because the passion may wear you down or wear out. So can you employ a system that's going to work to replicate?
Yeah, I think it would be – it's definitely one of those things that, like you say, to be scalable in the future. Like if we had a staff member in Floozie, I don't know even what we would get them to do.
Yeah, correct.
Because like how would I let go of anything?
Yeah, that's right.
You know? And so...
And I mean, you're only a couple of years in.
Yeah.
Realistically, you'd really want to wait 3 years, I guess, to be as organic and do as much as possible, work your ass off. And then you're like, okay, well, you know, 75% of small businesses fail within the first 3 years.
Yeah.
Mm. We've hit that target. Yeah. For me, the 3 years was the first target and then the 5 years was the second one.
Yeah.
Mm. I was confident that I'm not going anywhere after 3 years.
Yeah.
I think it's great what you're doing.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
And what I might do is we might actually wrap it up now because we've got to bounce and...
We do.
Yeah. So... Thank you so much for letting us into
your
roaster.
It's been so fun.
And remember to jump onto Instagram at Floozie Coffee and give them a follow. Say hi. It's really cool. Jump on the website, order coffee wherever you are. Give it a try. It's amazing.
It's the best coffee you'll ever have. Best in the world.
It's bloody good.
Well, it's the best coffee I've had without milk. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
There you have it.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Put that in your grinder and grind it. Grind it away. In your roaster and roast it.
Wow.
Put that in your V60 and filter it.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Filter that thing.
Okay. I've got to go, guys. Hey, I know I crap on all the time about getting our foundations in place, but our personal protection plan is something you need to do today. I know many of our listeners have got this set up, but if you're one of them and haven't already, go to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help, and I'll put you in touch with someone who can guide you through. Generally, there's no cost to have an initial chat. And if you're young, fit and healthy, you need to get this stuff in place today. If you've got a family and you're not covered, hey, what if you freaking died? I'm not messing around. You need to get insured. Do it now. And anyone that I refer you to will do it the same way that we teach and we talk about here. And that advice provider, wherever you are in Australia, are happy to have a complimentary discussion with you at no cost to see where you're at and see if they can help. So what have you got to lose? Have a chat today. Jump on to sortyourmoneyout.com and click get help. Rosantha asks, I'm currently contemplating whether I should take out a loan to consolidate my debt and get a new laptop that she needs for school. I don't earn enough to pay the loan off within a year.
Go and work extra hours to pay for it. Love.
I mean, it's a real problem. And I know that, you know, we need good computers. We need good gear. I just want to drive home that debt consolidation doesn't actually change anything. You can think it can, because what you might do, you might roll three debts that are, and I'm making up a number that you pay $200 a month for, into one debt, and the magic person behind the counter said, oh, now it's only $180 a month. So we've moved this debt and it's not $200 a month now, but it's $180 a month, but they've pushed out the repayment time.
Yeah.
So you're actually getting screwed more. And a lot of people do that and they don't fix the underlying problem, which is overspending or lack of income.
Yeah. Thinking they need something that exactly. when they don't.
But what happens is, you think, oh, I fixed the problem. I've consolidated the debt, but you haven't fixed the underlying cause.
Mm.
So what I would say in this situation is, don't worry about the debt consolidation. You need to get on a plan, and it might be the debt snowball where you list the debt smallest to largest, keep them all on minimum payments, and then just attack the first debt first. In terms of a laptop, I'd be jumping on Gumtree, eBay, and trying to get a secondhand one. Certainly would not be getting any further debt to buy a laptop, given that you won't be able to pay that back sooner. Yeah, I think there's a bigger problem there.
Yeah,
I want you to be successful with your money, but I want you to change the underlying problem. Because a lot of people, like, they'll write in and say, oh, I've got this problem and my partner's this and that. It's like, no, it's not a money problem. You've got a crap relationship and you need counseling. Like, that's... so.
At least this one's a money problem.
Yeah. Right. Well, but is it a money problem or an underlying behavior
just the
problem?
Spending problem?
Yeah, so the money usually is the symptom.
Yeah.
So
we don't need the best of something tomorrow.
Yeah. So, I mean... that's all I would say on that. Do you want to have? Do you guys want to add any wisdom in that?
No. There's 168 hours in the week. Work more to pay for it. Have the money there and then buy it outright.
I'd hate to work more.
Just spend less on other stuff.
And that's the thing. It's the trade-off.
Yeah.
It's like
cheaper dinners for a few weeks. And
then but
you've
they
got
may already be doing that. I'm assuming
exactly.
that they've got that in
kind
place.
Kind of don't know their situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will read a review. This is from Sarah. It's a 5-star. Driving to work on Tuesday mornings is significantly better because of this podcast. I've learned so much about how to get my money together and approach my financial future with all the information. I will harass all my friends to listen.
Well
so
done.
I will say, can everybody listening do me a favor? Copy the episode or the podcast that you know you're listening to now, this episode. Send the link to two friends. We just want to get this message out there to as many people as possible that you can get in control of your life. You can get in control of your money. You can take that passion that you found and turn it into a business that changes lives, be it across the other side of the world or my tongue with my taste buds right here.
Correct.
So we want to encourage as many people as possible and we need your help to spread the word. So
spread the good word.
I'm not asking for a share on Instagram, although you can do that if you like, but maybe send this as a personal Facebook message or a text to a friend. Hey, check this out. I think it would help. Thanks so much for joining us today, Sil.
Thank you.
Great to have you on.
We'll see you guys soon.
See you soon.
Bye.
Bye. If you are after personal financial advice, this podcast is not for you. In fact, it's a general advice podcast. But if you do want somebody to talk to, jump onto sortyourmoneyout.com and click on Get Help, and I'll be able to put you in touch with an advisor or a mortgage broker who can actually sit down with you or have a Skype or a Zoom meeting and really work out what you need based on your own personal circumstances.
Remember, we hang out on Insta at MyMillennialMoney. If you're a regular listener, you're welcome to join our Facebook group. If you want more money hacks, be sure to subscribe to My Millennial Money Express. It's short money hacks, anywhere, anytime, right into your ears. Any advice in this podcast is of a general nature only and has not been tailored to your personal circumstances. Please seek personal advice prior to acting on this information. Before making a decision to acquire a financial product, you should obtain and read the product disclosure statement relating to that product. Opinions constitute our judgment at the time of issue and are subject to change. Neither the licensee, any of the National Australia Group of Companies, nor their employees or directors give any warranty of accuracy, nor accept any responsibility for errors or omissions in this podcast. Glenn James, Urban Gator Proprietary Limited, trading as Sort Your Money Out, are authorised representatives of Apogee Financial Planning Limited, AFSL 230689.